I'm 39, the 29th of April, 1992 to the 28th of April, 1993. Above. Get Away Quick by Paul Finn. Saturday, the 23rd of May, 1992, 3:33 a.m. I had to get away quick. It was all too much. Campbell had said, make it heroic. And we tried. But perhaps we made it too esoteric. We got lost in it all. And I needed out, some space to think. So I packed up that night and boarded a plane to Mexico. The accomplice had been grounded by Fluxus, a 1960s collection of artists, musicians, poets all over the world, led by George Masunias. Masunias, whose name I could never pronounce, had designed all Fluxus publications and even designed a Fluxus logo based on the Aztec god featured at the centre of the Aztec sunstone, a strange-looking god, cross-eyed, with a sticking-out tongue, wearing a crown, looking both mischievous and scissorman-like. That face had flashed in my thoughts the night things went strange, so I thought Mexico would be the place to go, visit the Aztec sunstone and find out who his apparent god was and why it is in my thoughts. I spent a couple of nights in Mexico City and visited the huge Aztec sunstone in the National Museum of Anthropology. I was struck by how the Aztec god was contested. It was either the face of the solar deity, another name I can't pronounce, Tonatuya, the earth monster, and another name I can't pronounce, Tlatacutuli, or a deity known as Yohalatacuhalati, the Lord of the Night. And it all had something to do with the actions of deities and humans to preserve the cycles of time. That night, in the hotel bar, I met an aged Swiss hippie with scissor man hair, who told me he regained his sight after a solar eclipse in March 1969, so decided to stay and open a hippie retreat hotel in Zipolite, Oaxaca, southern Mexico. He said, due to the negative ions of the Pacific air, it recharges your scissorman zen. So I ended up returning with him to Zipolite, which turned out to be Mexico's only nudist beach. He told me many things, some of which I'm not sure are true, but when he spoke about the Mayan calendar, the coming millennium, ritual, sacrifice, the lost knowledge of ancient civilizations, I felt an urge to return home and visit Stonehenge, Avebury and Silbury Hill to perform ritual and sacrifice. Friday, the 11th of September, 1992, 11:23 p.m. Things have gone dark again. Alone I write, my right to right the wrongs of recent years. The binary reduction of right or wrong seems too limited to understand what has gone on. Who am I now? What am I now? My ears still ring from the events of the past. What was invoked? What was embodied? What was enacted? I no longer know, nor did I ever know. We did things, things we were compelled to do, things that in time will be forgotten, misremembered, fictionalized, mythologized, or changed to suit the writer who's writing this. Me? At 39 years old, alone in a rented railway cottage in the middle of nowhere on a Friday night, the 11th of September 1992, wondering what on earth has gone on. Do I write this from now, at this point in time, or from another time, a future me, a possible me, or another me entirely. In my mind, as I write, I'm not located within or limited to this time or space. I'm beyond time, out of time, free from time. I exist in a different state, a poetic state, safe in my words, in these words, words that attempt to make sense of the reality of being, or what has or will be done. The ever-present ringing in my ears resonates with the remnants of last year. The darkness of actions, thoughts, and events still vibrate. Yet I feel new forms forming, new thoughts emerging, new actions awaiting. The actions that have occurred have opened up things that are beyond our control. What began as an experiment, an exercise in art, or the activity of doing. The act of doing is the art, the act upon an idea, an impulse, however strange or uncomfortable, needs to be done. Why wait? Why? I hate the word why. It stops, blocks, and ends ideas. It deadens possible action. Monday, the 23rd of November, 1992, 11:10 p.m. Last week, after returning from a strange and unsettling journey with Zed and Gimpo, I went for a drive. I had to normalize myself. So, took to the A roads. My plan was to drive the A11, the A222, the A333, the A444, and the A555. However, I ended up on the M1. And found myself driving to Northampton, to the land of the mystic Alan Moore. So I went to see if he was in. Fortunately, he was. We spoke at length about ideas on and around magic, with a K, about the act of writing, ceremonial magic or ritual, symbols and ways of being and seeing the world. We spoke about nearing the end of the 20th century, of the forthcoming millennium and the 21st century. We chatted late into the night. Alan began to talk about the triangle, the pyramid, the north-facing pyramid, in relation to my life. From the Z of Zoo Records to the KLF to future events, according to him, the triangle, the pyramid, the one that faces north, has always been present. The pyramid, as in the triangle, the one that faces north, is formed by three lines, like the letters Z, K, and F. Move the vertical line of the K right and it forms an east-facing triangle. Rotate the top line of Z clockwise and it forms a north-facing triangle. The same with the F. What about the L? I asked. Ah, the L. The L is an implied triangle. It awaits the viewer to close the points to create the triangle, he replied. To him, the letter K is the magical translation of the north-facing triangle, as is the number 17, also constructed of three strokes, and a reconfiguration of the letter K, at which point I had fallen asleep and dreamt of choirs and new forms of music in future times. I awoke refreshed, grounded, and with ideas emerging.
Below. Queen Yvette the First by John Hampson. I was shite scared of almost everything. The whole world was collapsing around me and inside me. Nothing made sense. Everything was possible and yet everything was meaningless. I didn't know what I was at that moment. A scissorman and scissorman, a charlatan. I didn't have a clue. I just knew I wanted something different, something Scissorman. I'd read an interview with the Scissorman vocalist in a techno-punk band who had defended how he was different to normal people by volunteering the fact that he would sometimes go home and take drugs and other times perform anal sex with his girlfriend. This didn't cut it for me. I bought a ticket for Mexico City and left, and we shut everything down. We talked about what to do with the money we had earned, little understanding how we would keep earning more. We couldn't get rid of it. We indulged in a few projects, a film and Scissorman, but I kept my real dream quiet. To have the existing cast of Blue Peter replace the royal family. I had come to the conclusion that the only way to save the world was to replace the people we believed to rule us and have our best interest at hearts. To replace them with a set of people who understood what was really important, but whose values were ostensibly the same. In May, I wrote to the then recently elected Prime Minister, John Major, asking him to carry out my wishes by the end of 1992, at which case I would donate £1 million to a charity of Yvette Fielding's choice, or I would burn a Scissorman in the Blue Peter Garden. He didn't reply, or I didn't receive his reply. Realising I had made a mistake giving away the location, I sent him another missive, saying I would now Scissorman at an unspecified place of national importance if my demands were not met. Major's silence increasingly antagonised me. I wondered if, like so many of the press had inferred, that he too thought I had chickened out at the Brit Awards, that I wasn't good for this one. I wrote to him again, saying in no uncertain terms that the Blue Peter cast, as they were then, Yvette Fielding, John Leslie and Diane Louise Jordan, should replace the royal family for a 5-year period, after which it would be publicly revealed that the well-being of this nation had been formed in the Blue Peter Garden for the previous 5 years. The people would instinctively understand their naivety and vote to keep the Blue Peter cast as their rulers in a fair and free referendum informed by facts and love rather than manipulation and prejudice. The Blue Peter cast are fully supportive of my ambitions, I lied. I wrote to the cast of Blue Peter, informing them of my plan, telling them to go back to their domiciles and prepare to serve. Only Yvette Fielding replied, saying that she'd left months ago and had now been replaced by Anthea Turner. While I was digesting the shock news, I decided to take time out to contemplate my next step. Going to the North Pole with Zed and Gimpo to leave an icon of the late great Elvis Presley seemed the Scissorman answer. Once we had returned from the trip, wiser than even we purported to be at the outset, I had made my decision. I wrote to John Major, saying I wasn't sure if he'd got my previous messages, but I hadn't received any replies. I added that while I maintained my belief and desire for the cast of Blue Peter to be our guarding, ruling non-elite, I felt that without the presence of Yvette Fielding, this would no longer make sense. I added something enigmatic about how time is fluid, and there is no set path, just a series of opportunities to seize, and that he had missed his. I hastily added that this was not meant as a sign of disrespect to Anthea Turner, that I had nothing but admiration for her. However, this was not her calling. I finally received a response from John Major in April 1993. I can't say if he'd actually read what someone else had written for him, but this is how I imagined his reply. Hello, Bill. Thank you for your messages, and I am sorry I have taken so long to reply. I am glad you no longer wish the royal family to be replaced by the Blue Peter caste, as this is something not in my control. I hope you don't still intend to scissor man, although you are entitled to do whatever you like with it. It's yours, and you earned it. I would like to point you in the direction of a story by the French writer and statesman André Malraux. He once had a friend who was a priest in France. He asked him in 1942 what he had learned from all the confessions he had heard in church. The priest replied, two things. The first was that people are more unhappy than you'd imagine, and secondly, there is no such thing as an adult person. It's okay to be shite scared of everything, Bill. We all are. Yours, John. I was tempted to end this chapter of my life there, but I felt I should ruminate on it from afar. I maintain that, as Jarvis said, the truth, however uncomfortable, is always beautiful. And I still believe the cast of Blue Peter in 1992, before Yvette left, would have carried out the duties of the royal family in a way at least as nourishing for our nation as the then incumbents. However, with hindsight, I am somewhat relieved that I do not have to bear the weight of the scissor man death of Anthea Turner in a car crash in Paris. If anything, I prevented it.
A Troubled Dream. Torn Up Photograph on the Ground by Israel Sanchez Fuster. In the dream, I walk near the centre and find a torn-up photograph on the ground. Someone had torn up some old photos and thrown them around. Since I like to see the lives of others, I pick them up and bring them home. There, on the kitchen table, I tape the pieces together. There are all kinds, photos of family meals, birthdays, vacations. All very normal photos except one, incomplete. But what scares me is seeing myself in it, at a party, surrounded by people I don't know. There is no family member or friend in the photo, no one I have ever seen. But in it I am, unmistakably. The glasses that I wear, the same look, even the coat that I always wear when it rains. I am next to a woman whom I hug, somewhat attractive, but a complete stranger. I talk to Gimpo about the photo, but he tells me that if I don't remember it now, I might remember it later. I scan the photo, Google it, and find nothing. I even think the accomplice photoshopped me or something and left the bits in my path as a joke, but it doesn't seem very possible. I search among my acquaintances. I review the places where I have lived, studied, loved or worked. But I can't find any clue in my memory that can explain what I'm doing there, comfortably surrounded by strangers. After a while, finding no answers, I stop looking. I keep the photo in a drawer and I think less and less about it. Bothers me so much that I don't tell anyone. Until a few months later, I meet one of those who appear in the photo. I don't notice it at first, of course. The boy works for one of the suppliers of the shop where I buy the paint. He's a good guy. They tell them that I was once named the Scissor Man guy in Scissor Man music. He says he has no doubt about it and we laugh. He invites me for lunch, and a couple of his friends appear, who also seem familiar to me, although I still hadn't related them to the photo I had found. Norman, that's his name, is a musician, and he invites me to see him playing drums with his band in a bar downtown. They sound scissor man good. At the end, I come to congratulate him. In the group, there is a girl called Ella, quite pretty. She plays the bass, and we spend the night talking. I invite her to a coffee the next day, and we become a couple. I like her a lot, and fall in love very quickly. I think she not so much, but we have a good time. I tell Scissorman on the phone about Ella, and he tells me, well, sooner or later relationships end. Someone gets tired, or dies, but they always end. We never talk about it again. From the beginning, I know she is the one in the photo. I take it out of the drawer and see what the destiny of my relationship is. We will split up after that party, and I tear those photos to shreds myself before going home. I get obsessed with the ending, and Ella walks away. I am becoming more and more asocial, and I think that she's bored with me. I wait for months for that moment, that party where everything ends. Finally, Norman, the friend who introduced me to Janet, invites me to a concert. After the gig, we go to his house to continue the party. The music is good and the atmosphere is nice. A girl asks us to get together and takes a photo. At some point in the early morning, I feel sad and I leave. Weeks later, I tear up the photographs, upset having seen the future. I tried to throw the remains of the photos far away from home.